And welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, Professor Bob Harvey from Charlotte, sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. And Sam, you've got a text message that someone wrote. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I'm getting a text in from CJ that I would like to voice. He says the professor never mentioned the destruction of the family structure. Where's the dads and facts? I'm not sure, CJ, about that one. I'm sorry if I didn't voice that correctly. But lowest unemployment ever in the black community and every demographic only under Trump. The cries for your Democratic leaders defund the police, and yet he's the one with no concept of reality.
That's enough, Professor Harvey. You want to?
Well, you know, I mean, it's amazing when you sit here and understand that one of the roots of fatherless black families occurred under one of the most brutal and oppressive societal institutions that this country has ever had, and that's the institution of slavery. Where the black male had no particular role in that. And in a society where you continue to degrade, historically continue to degrade and dehumanize those individuals, you come away with the clear understanding that despite the fact that the 19th century issue of slavery is over, it ended with the 13th Amendment in 1865, let's understand that the conditions for dehumanizing the black male has continued. And the George Floyd situation is a classic example of where that life does not mean anything. The black male's life doesn't mean anything. So don't act like the hands are clean, you know, of the society where you have the dominant force just completely destroying or just continue to disarm that black family, black male figure. I mean, when you look at it from their standpoint, there's a subtle part of this that tells us that there are certain segments of the white dominant society that continues to play off of that. So it's something that's ingrained in us, in our society. And to take it a little further, we talk about black-on-black crime, because I know where a lot of that is leading and what the young man comes out. I understand that black-on-black crime is high. It's almost up to 83% to 84% of the crime that's committed in the black community. Black-on-black crime is there. But what about white-on-white crime? 90% of all the crime committed in the white community is committed by whites, on whites. Nobody's talking about that. Now, why is that social phenomenon so important? It's important because you show me an ethnic and or a racial group that resides anywhere in our society under any conditions, and I will show you a society where the majority of the crime committed against that particular ethnic and or racial group is committed by people from that group. And one of the reasons for it is quite simple. You live in the same property. You have the same issues and problems. And you take it out on each other. Displaced aggression has always been a part of our society. And inner aggression towards one another, that's one of the phenomena that we've always been a part of. So to sit here and want to play off of this thing about the black families, disgruntled, most black men are with their families. But the media is not going to play off of that because it sells. Whether it's Fox News or MSNBC or NBC or ABC or CBS or any of them, they're going to play off of the idea of black-on-black crime because it helps to sell and make people feel comfortable. It wasn't black-on-black crime to murder those little babies up there at Sandy Hook. But nobody wants to talk about that. They'll talk about the 10 shootings that occurred in the black community on Friday night, but they don't want to touch that type of crime. They'll talk about what Antifa is doing, you know, out there, but they don't want to talk about what happened on January 6th when the whole world saw what was going on. So we have to understand what the society is doing and why it's doing it. And it has nothing always to do with what black people are doing, what are the rest of America doing? And who controls the purse strings and who controls the manufacturing of guns, drugs, and bullets? Who controls that?
So Professor Harvey, I wanna change up now and have you give us your perspective on what's taking place in Ukraine. You keep hearing more and more from Russia, and they keep threatening and talking more and more about nuclear weapons. Let me ask you, Professor Harvey. You're a military guy, and you know your way around what's been going on with these wars and our involvement. What's going on in Ukraine that we should be engaged or involved to the degree that this could possibly lead to World War III?
Well, what's happening here, Earl, is, you know, when they talk about the Cold War, let's go back and take a look at that and talk. The Cold War pretty much started at the close of World War II in 1945. By then, Stalin was already proposing his post-World War II agenda. And communism was spreading like wildfire all the way through to East Berlin, to East Germany, and then, of course, West Germany, where the Allies, the British, the French, and the Americans put a stop to them there. And then, of course, later, shortly after that, NATO was founded, you know, and then, of course, in 1955, Russia came, the Soviet Union came back and created the Warsaw Pact. So we've been in these armed camps ever since. But remember, the Cold War was not just a theoretical and philosophical and ideological argument, but with two different concepts, communism as opposed to the West and the free world. But there were a whole lot of little hot wars, the Korean War, Vietnam, the French before they were driven out in 1954, Dien Bien Phu. All of those conflicts, the Chinese Revolution in 1948, even the Arab-Israeli conflicts, there were about six of them between 1948 all the way up until 1993, where you had these conflicts, you know, and always it was this battle between it, even with the Iraq conflict and the conflict in Afghanistan, the Russian invasion of Afghanistan, the Soviet Union in 1980. All of those conflicts were hot wars that were fought. Now, the current expansion of Russia's been doing that for a long time. They've been expanding, and their whole attempt to go into Afghanistan in 1979, really, when you think about the exact date, all of those conflicts were testing the boundaries of the commitment and the resolve of the West as opposed to the East. And so that situation is going to continue. Now, what Putin has told you is that he wants to restore the greatness of the former Soviet Union. That's what his goal is. He didn't try to hide it. He's right. Told you that. And going into Afghanistan was the first attempt by the Soviet Union, but that failed, and of course that cost the Russians and the Russian Empire fought. The communist empire, the Soviet Union, faltered. Then Putin comes along and decides that he's going to start expanding west by gobbling up the former Soviet satellite states of the Baltic states, of Estonia, Lithuania, and then of course going all the way down into looking at what he's going to do in Crimea, and now he's going after the prize jewel of Ukraine. He's already got Belarus under his control. But when you look at the Baltic states, they are now shaking in their boots, and then there's Poland that they've got to worry about. And if you take a look at a map, you'll see the three Baltic states. Then you will take a look at the border of Poland. And then, of course, you got Germany that's got to worried a little bit. And then, of course, if you go further south, you got Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia. All of those countries were a part of the Soviet bloc at one time. But now many of them, Poland, Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and others, they've now joined NATO, and of the 30 states that make up the country that make up NATO, they have already in their charter that if one is attacked, we all attack. So, but what Putin is trying to do is expand his boundaries so that he won't have to worry about somebody next door taking over, you know, his country and invading his country.
Let me ask you, Professor.
And yeah,
Harvey,
he has the nuclear weapons.
So
he has 13,000 of them.
So if that was America, would we be worried about somebody taking, you know, next door to us taking control
The United States has been pushing this since the days of the Monroe Doctrine of 1823, when we wanted, stated emphatically, and this was in the 19th century, in the early part of the 19th century, we said we don't want any European interference in the Western Hemisphere, not just North America, but Central America as well as South America. So the Monroe Doctrine, theoretically, in the Organization of American States, that entity has been in place for well over a century and a half. And the main thing is keep European and other foreign entities out of our affairs. And so, yeah, we're going to react to that.
So then,
well, naturally, we're going to protect our own borders.
So then, why are we upset with Russia trying to do the same thing?
Because there's a thing called history, Earl, and there's a thing that talked about how Germany in 1938 went into Czechoslovakia unprovoked and unchallenged. Then the next thing they do in 1939, they went into Poland. And the results, World War II. Now, we focus a lot on Germany invading Poland in 1939, but what we don't focus on is the fact that Stalin made a pact with one devil with another, with Hitler, and he decided to go into Poland from the east. And while Stalin was doing it, he had his sights going after Finland, you know, with the Finnish and Russian war in 1940. And that's why Finland right now is talking about joining NATO along with Sweden. So you've got some people who remember what happened in 1930.
So, Professor Harvey, hold the thought. Professor Harvey's on the line. You can join us, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Searching for